Today, I'd like to explain to you the way of Samatha and Vipassana practice. There are two types of meditation in the teaching of the Buddha. One is called Samatha, concentration practice. Another one is called Vipassana, insight knowledge, insight meditation. There are 14 meditation subjects of Samatha practice taught in Visuddhi Magga, the path of purification. But Vipassana is just one way. Seeing things as they really are, as anicca, impermanent, dukkha, unsatisfactory, anatta, not a self. Usually, we start with Samatha practice. Why? Because the Lord Buddha says in the Samadhi Sutta, a monk who has concentration sees things as they really are. What are the things they see as they really are? The five aggregates, or the noble truth of suffering, and the origin of the truth of suffering. And this truth of suffering and the origin of the suffering are very profound dharma. And it's because of not penetrating to this truth that we still wandering in the round of rebirth. So the initial practice is important. That is concentration practice, or we call Samatha meditation. So there are many ways, there are 40 ways. But usually we start with mindfulness of breathing, Anapanasati. Why? Because it is very easy to practice, because we are breathing all the time. We are breathing 24 hours. The only thing you have to do is to pay attention to your breath. So compare with other types of meditation, like four elements meditation, Tathina, 32 parts, Anapanasati is the most easy way to practice. You just learn the technique, then you can practice at home. Not like four elements meditation, which you need a teacher to guide you constantly. Then how to practice Anapana? I have explained to you in this morning, but I would like to repeat very softly. The object of mindfulness of breathing is your breath. Your in-breath and out-breath. And your duty is just observe your in-breath and out-breath under the nostril. Not following the breath go up to the head or down to the abdomen. Sometimes in the beginning you just observe in-breath, out-breath, in-breath, out-breath. Breathing in, breathing out, breathing in, breathing out. Then as time goes on, you were aware the long and short of the breath. Sometimes you breathe in, you feel that it takes longer time to finish the whole in breath. This is called long in breath. Sometimes you take long time to finish the out breath. This is called long out breath. And sometimes your in breath is short. It means that you take very short time to finish the in breath. It's called short in breath. Sometimes You take very short time to finish the out breath. So it's called short out breath. So you must be able to aware when the breath is long or it is short. This is the second step. The third step, the first step is just aware in breath, out breath. The second step, second stage, you aware whether the breath is long or short. So you pay closer mindfulness, not like beginning just in breath, out breath. Second step, you pay close mindfulness, awareness. And the third step, you must aware of the whole breath. What is the meaning of whole breath? When you start to breathe in, then the breath begins, then reaches the middle, then reaches the end of the breath. This is called a whole in-breath. But the whole in-breath doesn't mean that you follow the breath. If the end of the breath is the top of the head, doesn't mean that your mindfulness follow up to the top of the head. Your mindfulness remain under the nose still. So also our breath, when you breathe out, you start to aware the beginning of the out breath, the middle of the out breath, and the end of our breath. So this whole process is called the whole breath body in the Anapanasutra. Buddha says you must aware of the whole breath body from the beginning, middle and end, but your awareness remain under the nose, not following the breath up to the head or down to the stomach. Okay. As the concentration deepen again, your breath will become very, very subtle. Very, very subtle until you feel that almost no breath. At that time, you remind yourself, only that person has no breath. Wish they have breath. Only fourth jhana, no breath, or that person has no breath. You still have the breath, but owing to your weakness of the mindfulness, you are unable to aware of the subtle breath. So at that time, you don't know where to focus. So there are two alternatives, two ways to help you. One, you place your attention where your breath touches previously. If your breath touches somewhere on the tip of the mouth, then you keep your attention there. Although you cannot feel the breath, never mind, you increase your mindfulness, look closely, then the breath will come back to you again. This is one way. If it doesn't work, then you just breathe in more, little bit, with little bit effort. Then your breath will become clear, little bit, to you. Then you can concentrate on the breath again. So you try which way is work better for you. Okay. So when the mind, your breath becomes so subtle, then gradually you feel some light appear. The light. Initially the light comes from in front, side, from the side in front or above. So you get excited, never see before. Then you pay attention to the light. Then the light say goodbye to you, disappear very quickly. Then you come back to the breath again. After some time, another light comes. You get excited again. Then, and this breath is very, very fine. The moment you get excited, it pass away, it disappear. So whenever you see the light, don't get excited. You know this. The light is a sign of concentration, just to tell you your concentration is progressing. Come and greet you. So if you get excited, then the light will go away. So if you didn't pay attention, if you do not pay attention to the light, gradually the light will last longer. Now the light more familiar with you, so it will stay longer. For 10 minutes, or 20 minutes, or 30 minutes. For some different person, sees different light, different color of light. Some see yellow, some see white, some see blue, purple, and the light also keep on changing. For somebody, they see different type of form of light. Okay. As long as the light far away from your nose here, you should not pay attention to the light. Bear in mind, as long as the light is far away from your nostril, please don't pay attention to the light. It will disappear. So, there are three types. In the course of training, you will see, you will experience or encounter three types of nimitta. Nimitta we call sign of concentration. First one is called parikama nimitta. It's gray color. Gray color. As the concentration different, it becomes ugaha nimitta. We call learning sign. From gray color, it becomes white color, like cotton wool. Not bright, only white color. It can be a little bit far away from nostril or can be close to the nostril. If this cotton wool appear for 10 minutes, then disappear, then you should not pay attention to it. But if it is under your nostril and last for half an hour, without changing, without moving, without shaking, then you should pay attention to this ugaha nimitta. When you pay attention to this ugaha nimitta, your concentration different, it will change again, become transparent or radiant, bright, like sun, like morning star, like diamond. This is called Patibhaga nimitta, counterpart sign. And this Patibhaga nimitta is the object of jhana, of anapana sati. So now, in the beginning, before nimitta comes, your object of observation is breath. After the nimitta comes, becomes Patibhaga nimitta, transparent, bright, radiant, like morning star, like diamond, and under the nostril, without shaking, without changing, stable for half an hour, then you can concentrate on this Patibhaga nimitta. No more concentrate on your breath. This important instruction, please bear in mind. And sometimes you may find, when you breathe in, breathe out, the light follow your breath. When you breathe out, the light follow out. Breathe in, the light follow in. This is called 100% nimitta. So nimitta is unified together with the breath. So when you reach the state where you find nimitta unified together, two blend together, two become one, then it's the time for you to concentrate on this nimitta. No more breath. As your mind concentrates on the Patibhaga nimitta for 1 hour continuously, then you will reach jhana absorption. We call absorption concentration or jhana concentration. First jhana. I'm not going to teach you up to fourth jhana. Just let you understand the process. The whole process in the course of training. When you reach the fourth, when you reach the first jhana, that concentration is enough for you to go to vipassana. Even excess concentration is enough. No need jhana concentration. So after you have achieved deep concentration, you turn back, turn inwardly to your body, to your mind and body. Now, using the concentration you have accumulated, using that as a vehicle, you know, to investigate your mind and body. Why should we investigate the mind and body? Why? What true nature? Okay, good. Because the mind and body is equal to five aggregates. You know five aggregates? Rupa khanda, vedana khanda, sanya khanda, sankara khanda, vinyana khanda. Materiality aggregate, feeling aggregate, perception aggregate, formation aggregate, and consciousness aggregate. And these five aggregates are the object of our clinging. We cling to these five aggregates by way of craving and by way of wrong view. Wrong view as I, mine, myself. By way of craving, we attach to this five aggregate. And by way of wrong view, we think this materiality aggregate is I, mine, myself. We think all our feelings as I, mine, myself. We think what we perceive as I, mine, myself. And we think what all our emotions, anger, delusion, greed, jealousy, are I, mine, myself. And we think all our consciousness, seeing consciousness, feeling consciousness, body consciousness, and mind consciousness. We think all this, we identify all this as I, mine, myself. So we cling to this five aggregates by way of wrong view. And this is the truth of suffering. Dukkha Satya. Buddha says, what's the truth of suffering? In Dhamma Satya Pavatana Sutta, Buddha says, in short, five aggregates of clinging are the truth of suffering. And this truth of suffering must be fully known. Without fully understanding the truth of suffering, you are unable to escape from the round of rebirth. Why? Because you don't know it's suffering, then you keep on attached to it. Only when the truth of suffering is fully understood, then you let go your attachment. This is the reason we must investigate our mind and body in order to understand suffering. And this suffering is not easy to comprehend without deep concentration. For an example, body. We always cling to our body as permanent, happy, as a self. Body as I as body. This is called wrong view. We always think like that, in this way. Now, with the deep concentration, you see into your body, then you come to understand this body is composed of four elements. Earth element, water element, fire element, and wind element. Patari dhatu, apo dhatu, tejo dhatu, and vayo dhatu. Only four elements. As we keep on descending the four elements from top of the head down to the soul, for example, Patthavi Dhatu, one round, Apo Dhatu, Tejo Dhatu, and Vayu Dhatu. Again and again from top of the head down to the soul, again and again. Gradually, you can see all these elements become billions of rupa kalapa, particles. All this body, this body composed only billions of particles arising and passing away, arising and passing away very swiftly. At the time you come to understand, previously what I think the body as I, myself is just wrong understanding. Now it becomes so clear to you, it's just arising and passing away, arising and passing away. Then you understand the body is impermanent. And constantly, you know, when you see arising and passing away, arising and passing away, you will feel that the oppressing, being oppressed by this constant arising and passing away, is so unsatisfactory. It's so undesirable. Not something very delightful. It's so disgusting. Then, when you know it is disgusting, you get disenchanted. When you get disenchanted, then you let go of your attachment to your body. And this is how we penetrate into our body with inside knowledge. Okay? Then, now we come to feeling aggregate. We have many types of feeling. We have pleasant feeling, unpleasant feeling, neither unpleasant nor pleasant feeling. And this feeling, if you investigate, if you investigate this feeling, where this feeling comes from, it must come from six contacts. Eye contact, ear contact, nose contact, tongue contact, body contact, and mind contact. When your eye comes to contact with agreeable visual object, for example, before you go to take your lunch, you see a chocolate cake. The moment your eye comes to contact with chocolate cake, before the chocolate cake touches your tongue, you already have pleasant feeling. Because of that pleasant feeling, you stretch out your hand, hold the chocolate cake, and put into your mouth. The moment the taste touches your tongue, more pleasant feeling. More and more pleasant feeling comes. So where the pleasant feeling comes from? Eye contact and tongue contact. Even after you finish, after you finish the eating chocolate cake, you remember again mind contact. You remember again the delicious of the chocolate cake. The craving is still there. The craving can arise again because of mind contact. So all these feelings come from where? Come from contact. So if you can investigate in this way, you understand. Feeling is the effect of a cause. Feeling is the effect of a cause. When the contact finishes, for example, when the tongue, the chocolate you think eating, if you do not think again, that you finish eating, contact finishes, then the pleasant feeling also finishes. When the pleasant feeling, what we call I, my, myself, is something which we can control. Something which we can control. Then we call I, my, myself. But now, pleasant feeling, because normal contact of chocolate with my tongue, the pleasant feeling disappears. So it's non-self, it's something which we cannot control. It only arises again when you eat again. the present during arise again. When you eat again, present feeling arise again. When it does not, when you stop eating, that present feeling stops. So it's just an effect of the cause. It's an effect which is produced by the cause. You cannot say it's I, mine, myself. It's just a natural phenomena arise due to causes. When the causes disappear, cease, then the feeling also cease. Okay? But sometimes the causes, the feeling still not cease. Why? Let's say somebody abuse you. When the unpleasant feeling, when a disagreeable word, abusive word, come to contact with your ear sensitivity, what feeling arises in you? Abusive word. What feeling? Unpleasant feeling. Unpleasant feeling arises because of abusive word. But now, if somebody praises you, when this word comes to contact with your ear, feeling arises. Depend on contact, feeling arises. This time, what type of feeling? Pleasant feeling. You see, unpleasant feeling also arises, depend on cause. Pleasant feeling also arises, depend on causes. All arise, depend on causes, on contact. Okay, now, let's say somebody abused you for 5 minutes. Unpleasant feeling arises. If you cannot observe this unpleasant feeling, if you cannot observe it as impermanent, as non-self, then what will follow after unpleasant feeling? What will follow?
Depression.
Depression is type of anger. Anger will follow. Irritation, agitation will follow. Okay. Now, the sound stops. No more abusive words come to contact with your ear. Already 3 minutes, you get depressed for 3 minutes. Now the sound stops. Do you still have unpleasant feeling or not? Yes or no? Yes. Okay. According to dependent origination, when cause ceases, effect ceases. Now the cause already ceases. No more abusive words contact to your ear. Why are your unpleasant feelings still there? Why?
Memory.
What else? Why? This is, you got to investigate why. This is the Dhamma. If you can investigate why, you are bound to make progress in your practice. So Dhamma is called Dhamma Vichaya. Investigation of the Dhamma. Sambhojanga, the 7 factor of enlightenment, number 2. Dhamma Vichaya. Investigation of the Dhamma. Okay, why you investigate? Now, contact teacher. Why my feeling, my unpleasant feeling, never cease? Not even that. It may go on until tomorrow. Even in the dream, you remember, he scolded me. Why? What? Clinging? Yes, excellent. Because of your clinging. You cling to this unpleasant feeling as I, mine, myself. You don't want to let go. You cling to it and you cling to this abusive word. You cling to feeling as I, mine, myself. That's why feeling does not go away. If you can let go of that clinging, the moment the abusive word come to contact with your ear, you contemplate impermanent, then the sound ceases, your feeling ceases together. But because we do not contemplate, we just follow the feeling, unpleasant feeling, he scolded me, not anything. So you cling to this unpleasant feeling. If you cling for 1 hour, this unpleasant feeling, you suffer for 1 hour. If you cling until tomorrow, you suffer until tomorrow. So how to free from the suffering? Let go, letting go. Okay, so this is the way of practice. Huh? It's called vipassana, the way of practice. Why we have?
But it's before you remember.
But no anger. Because you do not clean.
Yeah, and you don't think that it's forgotten.
Good, that's good. That's
but
good.
Then you must still remember how something happened. Is that still clean?
No. Because we have perception, you know. Perception or copy can help us to remember. As long as you do not react with anger, it's fine. Okay, good. Okay, so now we come back to the vipassana practice. I just tell you how our mind reacts. Okay, we come to the vipassana practice. How to practice vipassana? Because feeling is one of the objects of our observation. Vedana, nupassana. Kita, nupassana. Feeling, our anger, our reaction, all are the object of our observation in the vipassana practice. So in order to practice vipassana, we have two important factors, two important mental factors, cetasika. Number one is sati, mindfulness. Number two, panya, wisdom. Okay. Yes, mindfulness, one, recognizing. You're recognizing what's happening in you now, at this present moment. For example, unpleasant feeling arises. You know unpleasant feeling arises. You recognize it. Number two, you accept it. Accept first, okay. If you cannot recognize, if something, for example, anger arises in you, greed arises in you, jealousy arises in you, and we don't have sati, no mindfulness, what will happen? Yes. The mind out of control. Then we react accordingly. We react with the anger. We react with the jealousy. We react accordingly to what is arisen in the mind. Then once you react, when you anger, now you want to release your anger, then you utter some harsh speech. Or your body will act very violently. So at that time, if you react with anger, or you react to whatever evil state arising in your mind, then at that moment you are performing karma. Karma, new karma is performed. Not only that, you hurt other people. You hurt the other party. You hurt yourself, and you hurt the other party. You hurt the other party is very obvious because you utter harsh speech. You hit somebody. But how you hurt yourself? Karma. You have performed, you have accumulated that karma for yourself. Every reaction of the mind, every reaction, whether mentally, physically, or verbally, leaves behind karmic potency, leaves behind karmic force. And this karmic force is latent. Latent. When the opportunity arises, it will bear fruit. So when the vipaka, the resultant, appears, then you suffer, we suffer accordingly. We suffer to our own previous action. So it's very important first to have mindfulness, recognizing it, so that you can control your mind. Without sati, mindfulness, your mind out of control. Then your mouth can scold anybody you like. Your body can hit anyone you like. Because already out of control. So first, develop mindfulness. Then after that, accept whatever arising in your mental state. Accept it. Whether it's a good or bad. You may ask, anger, where should I accept anger? I want to throw it away, push it away. If you are ordinary person, okay. But now we are talking about vipassana. It's in your ordinary life. You can, anger is no good, I should throw it away. Okay, fine, very good. But now I'm talking the way of practice, vipassana. In vipassana, you don't choose. Whatever arising in your mental state, you just observe whether it's good or bad. So anger arises in you, you just know anger has arisen in me. This is called recognizing, acknowledge. Second, you accept anger as it is. Don't try to reject it, push it away. If you try to reject and push it away, then the underlying defilement of anger, or underlying defilement of more deep-rooted anger, is in your mind. Anything you want to push away is a type of anger itself. So when anger has arisen in you, you know it's anger. Accept anger as anger. Then after that, try to disidentify. These two factors is called mindfulness. First, recognizing. Second, accept it as it is. As it is. Not accept it as the way you want. If you accept it as the way you want, it means you already act self. You already act self inside. Things happen not according to your wish. So you accept it as it is, not the way you want it to happen. Okay? So this truth comprises, and this truth belongs to mindfulness. Then we go to the wisdom. Mindfulness itself not enough. The path of Buddha, the teaching of the Buddha is all wisdom and compassion. This truth. So, wisdom. First, anger, you disidentify anger as you disidentify anger as I, mine, myself. You already have enough knowledge. Buddha mentioned many times. All phenomena is non-self. So you disidentify anger mentally. You must teach yourself. Anger is not I, not mine, not myself. When anger arises in you, first recognize, accept, then you disidentify anger as not I, not mine, not myself. Many times, anger is not I, not mine, not myself. This is called disidentify. Then after you ask yourself, in this situation, anger is not I, not mine, not myself. What is it? What is it? Where it comes from? You investigate. Where it comes from, anger? Yes, it must depend on some causes. Before that, I do not get angry. Now you are listening to my Dharma, you do not get angry. But if certain people come and tell something bad to you, you get anger. So anger arises depend on causes. Not all the time you are angry. Only causes, when there is cause for it to arise, it arises. So you investigate, it's not I, not mine, not myself. Then what is it? Where it comes from? So you investigate the cause. When you find out the cause, you work the cause. If you can stop the cause, anger will disappear. Then you understand cause and effect. Cause and effect. Cause and effect. After you understand cause and effect. When you understand cause and effect, you understand non-self. The non-self nature is to be understood by way of dependent origination. If you must understand the teaching of the Buddha, there are two types of truth. One is called Samuti Satya, one is called Paramattha Satya. So in a Samuti Satya, conventional truth, yes, that I, you, Mali, Mahinda, yes, we accept that. This is called conventional truth. But if you are always living in the conventional truth, if you never go beyond conventional truth, you will never make progress in your spiritual path. That is true. Okay? So you must go beyond that conventional truth and reach ultimate truth. Feeling is ultimate truth. So to say that as a person, you and I is conventional truth. Ultimate truth is what? Ultimate truth is only nama rupa. Nama rupa. So feeling is only nama. Mentality. Then you investigate with anger. Anger is also part of mental phenomena. It's called formation, aggregate, sankhara khanda. Anger belongs to sankhara khanda, formation aggregate. Then anger has its own characteristics, has its own function. So when the time when you get angry, your whole body becomes so hot. This is the function of anger itself. Anger is a mental state which can produce a lot of heat element in the body. And then your whole body becomes very hot, and because of that, the vayu dhatu, wind element, also becomes strong when your body shakes. So all these are the manifestations of anger itself. So it's only formation aggregate. Then you reach the ultimate truth. Then you disidentify anger is just a mental phenomena arises due to causes. It's just an effect arises due to certain causes. And now it's performing its function. My heart beats so fast, my whole body is shaking because of anger. Don't identify anger as you, I myself. Now anger is performing its own function only. And after that, so you must accept this truth, conventional truth and ultimate truth. Then after that, you contemplate anger as impermanent. Buddha repeatedly says, sabbe sankhara anicca, sabbe sankhara dukkha, sabbe dhamma anatta. All formations are impermanent, all formations are unsatisfactory, and all dhamma are non-self. So you keep on contemplating impermanent of anger. Impermanent. Okay. Then you may ask a question. I contemplate impermanent, but anger is still there, never pass away. In the beginning, it's okay, no problem. Because you are not. Because why you do not see anger passing away? Because your sati and panya is not sharp enough to see it passing away. All the mental Buddha say, within one snap of finger, billions of mentality already arise and pass away. But why you never see? We see anger last for 5 minutes, some even last for 20 minutes or 30 minutes or 1 hour. Why I never see it arising and passing away? Two reasons. Very important. One, because your mindfulness and wisdom is not sharp. One. Second, because in the subconsciousness, you still cling to the anger of I, mine, myself. These two main reasons that you cannot see anger pass away so quick. So how to teach our subconsciousness so we not to cling to it? So we have to contemplate impermanent. Whether you really see it arising and passing away or not, in the beginning, not so important. Because you just want to teach your consciousness, sabbe sankhara anicca, so that you can let go of it. This is an important step. If you don't even know sabbe sankhara anicca, of course you will cling. So just contemplate impermanent. After in due course, if you become more and more familiar with the practice, and this impermanent already go deep into your subconsciousness, then later on you will find that the moment you contemplate, the moment is passed away. Then you gain a lot of faith, confidence in the practice. and you gain a lot of faith in the teaching of a Buddha. What Buddha says is correct. This type of knowledge is independent on anyone. Your own practical experience, this type of realization, this type of knowledge is independent on anyone. Your own practical experience. So after contemplate impermanence, then you let go. You also have to teach your consciousness. Let go. Mentally you say letting go. And if you can practice accordingly the way I teach you in your daily life, and not only in meditation. In meditation, very few emotions. The mind is concentrated, very few emotions. You no chance to contemplate all these emotions. In your daily life, a lot of emotions. Your anger, your grief, your jealousy, you know, your reaction, so gross. So at the time you should start to mindful, aware, recognize, accept it, disidentify it, investigate it, contemplate impermanence, and finally letting go. If you can practice this one in your daily life, you are bound to make progress. And your life will change. Within very short period, your life will change. Okay. So when the moment you let go of your anger, the moment you let go of your anger, you feel relief. So much relief. And this is called liberation. Liberation from that very moment. Liberated from the Kriyata, from the defilement, from that moment. So the practice of the Dharma is moment to moment practice. You don't hope to go for intensive retreat that I cut all the defilement together. Not possible. You have to remove it little by little in your daily life. In your daily life, whatever emotion comes, whatever kilesa comes, you contemplate in the way I teach you, then you remove it moment to moment, until your kilesa becomes so weak, weaker, and you come for a retreat. One retreat, you cut it off permanently. That is possible. Okay, now I continue how to reach the path. Okay, so if you contemplate whatever comes, you just contemplate. So important mindfulness first. You don't even mindful of what is arising. You don't even know what is arising in your mental state. How can you contemplate impermanence? So first mindfulness, second wisdom. Nowadays in whole world, so many teachers teach only mindfulness, no wisdom. You can check, you go for retreat. Many teachers only teach mindful of what you are doing, just mindful. But they seldom teach you investigate, disidentify, letting go impermanence, letting go people. Very often, especially Western culture, Western teacher always teach letting go. But how to let go? We don't know the way how to let go, you know? You must know the way to let go. Only mentally let go cannot. So important, mindfulness and wisdom are two important factors. So if you keep on, you know, contemplate impermanence. Let's say unpleasant feeling of sorrow, unpleasant feeling has arisen in me. So I contemplate impermanence, pass away. Very good, you know. When unpleasant feeling is so difficult to bear, you know. So when unpleasant feeling passes away, you feel so good, you know. Very good, very blissful. But unfortunately, that unpleasant feeling comes back again. Then you contemplate again, impermanence, anicca, then pass away. When it appears, it's so unbearable, you know. In order to escape, to free from it, you go to contemplate. Impermanent, anicca. Then it passes away. Oh, very good. Very relief. So, third time, it arises again. you feel the pain again, no? You feel the pain of unpleasant feeling again. Then you contemplate impermanence, anicca, anicca, it passes away. Ah, you feel so blissful. So the arising, when you see it, when it arises, it's very painful. And it teaches, it's very blissful. Then you see, then from this you start to understand, whatever arises is arising of suffering. Whatever ceases is a cessation of suffering. Buddha said very clearly in the sutta. Before I can understand, I never understand this one. Whatever arises is arising of suffering. Whatever ceases is a cessation of suffering. I never understand. Until I come to my own practical experience, I truly understand what Buddha says. At the time, you not see a person anymore. No self. Just you just understand whatever arises is arising of suffering. Whatever ceases is the cessation of suffering. But the phenomena keep on arising and passing away, arising and passing away. Why? Then when you keep, when you feel, you know, arising is arising, when you keep on seeing, you know, arising and passing away, arising and passing away, you feel the oppression. Very strong oppression. Oppression, oppressed by what? Oppressed by being, oppressed by repeated arising and passing away. Then you start to understand what Buddha say, what is anicca is dukkha. You start to understand. The realization come to you. What Buddha say? What is anicca is dukkha. What is suffering? What is impermanent is suffering. Many people don't understand suffering. They think bodily pain, aging, sickness, and death is suffering. That type is very gross suffering. Everybody has that. Even regardless religion, whether you are Hindu, Islam, Christian, everybody, when you come to this world, you have aging, sickness, and death. Not that type of suffering Buddha referred to. Buddha referred to dukkha is repeatedly oppressed. Oppressed by repeated arising and suffering is called dukkha, dukkha. Then you really come to understand what Buddha says dukkha. Suffering, unsatisfactory, undesirable. Then when you understand dukkha, Buddha says, when you understand changing, impermanent, is suffering, then you also understand non-self, not self. How can you say something subject to change, something keep on arising and passing away, is a self? Your feeling is keep on arising and passing away, arising and passing away. How can you say something arising and passing away so swiftly is a self? No. Then the understanding comes to you. It's non-self, not a self at all. And you get so disenchanted. You get so disenchanted with this repeated arising and passing away. Previously, you get, you are enchanted. You like your feeling. You enjoy your feeling. You like it. Why? Because you do not see things as they really are. Now you start to see things as they really are. They keep on arising and passing away. It's something very unsatisfactory. So once you see clearly, once you see truly what's happening, then you get disenchanted. Once you get disenchanted, you become detached. You no more delight in it. No more delight in your feelings. You become detached. That's why the Lord Buddha, Buddha asked Venerable Sariputta. He said, Sariputta, why you do not delight in feeling? Sariputta, Venerable Sariputta, contemplate feeling and become arahant. So Buddha, one day Buddha asked him, why you do not delight in feeling, Vedana? Then when the birds are put down say, because I see it change. I see the feeling changing all the time. I see it's impermanent. What is impermanent? The answer. What is impermanent is suffering. That's why I do not delight in it. If you delight in suffering, then there's no path to get out from suffering. Now, no one will delight in suffering. No one. Everybody looking for seeking happiness, not suffering. So, Venerable Sariputta says, I do not delight in feeling because I see it change. What is keep on changing is suffering. That's why I do not delight in it. So also when you see, you know, when you really see whatever arising and passing away is suffering, then you get disenchanted. When you get disenchanted, your mind no more cling to it, no more cling to them. And you become detached, become equanimous. This freedom of the heart, the freedom of the heart. And only at that moment, at that moment, you no more cling to the feeling. As you keep on going, keep on practicing in this way, so moment to moment, you do not cling. What will happen? Just like an oil lamp, burning oil lamp. The lamp is burning because of oil. The old oil is there. The old oil is there. That's why the lamp is burning. Now, if you stop putting the new oil, and the oil burn for a long time, do you think it will extinguish or not? Yes or not? Yes. Because you do not put in the new oil. So also, if you do not put in the craving, the delight in whatever phenomena, either materiality, aggregate, feeling, aggregate, sankhara, aggregate, formation, aggregate, vinyana, aggregate, whatever five aggregates arise in your body and mind, you do not crave for it. You do not put the new oil to the burning oil lamp. After some time, the oil lamp will extinguish. But if you keep on putting the new oil, this new oil is craving. Craving is the origin of suffering. If you keep on putting the new oil into the oil lamp will never come to extinguishment. Never. So if you practice in this way, moment to moment, finally you reach the final cessation. So from the momentary cessation, you reach final cessation. So this is the end of the practice. I think enough for today. Any questions? Is it clear to you? Clear the path of practice. And this is very easy way. Very, very easy way. You can practice at home. Because this five aggregate is with you all the time. You just need two things, mindfulness and wisdom. Constantly. Then you are going to achieve your goal from moment to moment. Finally, you reach final cessation. I have no doubt about this part. Okay, any questions? Yes.
So what happens if you get the chocolate, you eat the chocolate, and you get me for a week, and then go? Not just you get the chocolate again, you eat the meat.
Okay. You don't linger on it. Okay. 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 You must know when you eat the time, what happened to your mind. Now what you say is after that. After you eat, you do not remember it anymore. So craving does not arise. But the moment you eat time, the moment you eat, is craving arise or not? The moment you eat the chocolate, Now you think after that, your question is after that. Now I'm asking you, the moment the chocolate touch your tongue, is the craving arise or not? Huh? Momentary craving is also karma. Huh? Also karma. Craving leads to clinging. Clinging leads to bawa becoming. Bawa leads to birth. Also karma. But because you, after that you forget it, then you do not accumulate more craving on me. But the moment you eat the time, you still have momentary craving. That's momentary karma also. That's why this afternoon I teach you how to eat with wisdom. That's not happening, not enough. You've got to contemplate impermanent anicca dukkhanatta. You've got to contemplate that. Yes. Just aware, not enough. Huh? Wisdom is important. Right. No, if you eat with wisdom and do not let craving overwhelm you, or do not let craving arise, then moment to moment you are cut off, remove the strength of the craving. You are weakened, your craving. But the moment you have no mindfulness, no wisdom, then you are building up the army of craving. Yes. No, he said momentary craving. Yes.
But that is different from feeling the taste.
Okay, I understand. So when the chocolate, when the chocolate touch the tongue, immediately pleasant feeling arises. This one, Arahant, also has that pleasant feeling. Present feeling is no one can control. You know, Arahant also has that present feeling. But Arahant does not crave for that present feeling. We crave. That's our second time. Third time, you stretch your hand ten again and again. So you've got to tell yourself whether you crave for that feeling or not. Sometimes it can be very fast. You don't even know. You know, you don't even know. Only after from the ayah, one craving for it, you know, you enjoy it. Only now you realize. Because our mindfulness is not sharp. Our wisdom also not sharp. But if you keep on practicing like that, your wisdom and mindfulness will become sharper and sharper. Okay. Craving for something, we shouldn't say craving. For example, let's say blood sugar go down. Huh? My blood sugar go down. That moment, my body needs sweet in order to boost up my blood sugar. Then I understand this is not craving. It's a bodily need. You must able to differentiate. Is it bodily need or is it craving? You must be able to differentiate it. So that's why in Buddha's culture, when we eat, we contemplate. Setting this food not for enjoyment, not for taste, not for beauty, not for happening, but to sustain this body in order to practice the path of purity. We always contemplate so that we will not, you know, intoxicated by the food. You also should contemplate that. Yes?